Thank you for tuning in to the Movie Geeks United Independent Film Spotlight. In this episode, we'll be chatting about a great new film titled Generation Iron, a sequel of sorts to the groundbreaking documentary Pumping Iron from 1977. The film was wildly successful when it was distributed independently last year, and it hits Blu-ray and DVD on April 4th. We're honored in this conversation to speak to the film's director, Mr. Vlad Uden.
I think the main motivation for me with bodybuilding is knowing that there's no such thing as the perfect body. But I'm going to chase it as hard as I can.
Myself as a bodybuilder should be someone constantly striving to be 1% better every day.
I'm covering every angle to be better than them.
I don't care what kind of scientific formulas or whatever it is you come up with, there's no substitute for hard, hard work.
The title of 2011 Mr. Olympia, Phil Heath!
There's a lot of people out there wondering, can he do it again?
What does it mean to be Mr. Olympia? You have to go to bed every night and say, am I fulfilling the task of being the best at what I do?
Phil Heath has had a lot of gifts.
He thinks that hard work is going to be talent.
Keep your gifts. I work hard. If anything, I like to be the guy that smiles, plays nicely, you know, but I'm trying to take your head off just like
We're the meatheads. We're the idiots. We're able to do something that 99.8% of the people on the earth can do, which is lose fat and gain muscle at the same time.
People go, oh, steroids. And nobody can do that. Like, it's not easy to do. People don't respect it. Like, oh, I can do that with steroids. No, you couldn't. No, you couldn't. You couldn't do what I do.
My physique that I bring to the Olympia this year, it's not the product of 3 months of hard work, it's the product of over 20 years of hard work.
Each man's body will represent years of focus and concentration.
Is there a limit to growth? You know, certainly there's a limit, but I don't know that we found it.
If you and Phil Heath are 100% on game day, who wins?
I'm not mentally ready.
I expect to be the last one to
No matter how well you place at the last show, this is the one everybody remembers.
When you line up the best in the world, it's so easy to judge.
It'll be a great event.
If you want something you never had before, you got to be willing to do something you've never done before. And that's what I live by.
Never going to stop till I get what I want.
What led to this journey for you, for Generation Iron?
Well, you know, for me, I got intrigued by the sport of bodybuilding, you know, especially the professional side of bodybuilding. I think like most people, kind of like, I didn't know too much about it, you know, and I was intrigued by it because obviously, you know, like most people, I go to the gym once in a while, and I think fitness is huge, but when it comes to the professional side of bodybuilding, I think all of us are kind of just not familiar with the sport, and there's a lot of I would say misconceptions about it. It's somewhat, I would say, controversial at times. I think some people just don't get it in general. So I wanted to explore it, and that led to eventually me making a film about it.
Well, there was, I mean, when Pumping Iron came out decades ago, that cast a really bright spotlight on bodybuilding, and I'm sure it kind of colored the perception of it out in the public, but in the decades that have followed the release of that movie, how has that perception of bodybuilding changed, do you think?
Well, you know, Pumping Iron, it started, you know, first of all, that movie was so monumental because it was a great film, but also because it really sparked a revolution in fitness world. It really started fitness, if you think about it, and brought it to the masses. You know, after that film, you can always track kind of like what changed, how the Hollywood changed, you know, and how if you look at the action films or if you look at kind of how people started looking at the, you know, the lead characters and their physiques changed. It became obviously, you know, it became important to be in shape in general. But over the years, like you mentioned, you know, professional bodybuilding, when it comes to, you know, the guys that are pros, I think some people might think that their physiques are extreme, you know, and they're not just, you know, regular fitness bodies, but they really kind of go beyond and above what most people consider kind of appealing, you know what I mean? So, and that's really the big debate, you know, what's too big, you know, what's too kind of like, what kind of muscles are more attractive and what kind of not, you know, so that's a big debate that's happening, I think, in the sport right now.
Well, and there's also, it's stated at the beginning of your film, which Mickey Rourke narrates, that there's this perception among a lot of people that these are freaks. I mean, they don't quite understand the point of this sport, I guess. But what did you find in terms of the motivation amongst these athletes?
Well, you know, I look at bodybuilding as more of an art form than sport even. You know, it's a combination of sport and art form, but really, you know, some people look at certain art pieces and they see a beauty in it, and some people see an art piece at a gallery or something and they just don't get it, or they don't consider it art, or they don't consider it beauty. You know, so that's how I look at bodybuilding, you know, professional bodybuilding. Some of us look at it and see something extraordinary, and some people just see, you know, see something grotesque for them. And also, you know, when it comes to bodybuilding, it's interesting, you know, not all kind of big, huge guys are essentially bodybuilders, you know what I mean? The top professionals in the world, even though they're big, but it's also they're very, you know, very defined. Every muscle group is very defined, so it's very scientific. So the judges in that sport are looking for something very, very specific, you know what I mean? So I think most of us, people that are just in a normal world, they kind of, they put everything in the same bracket. If you're really huge, you're a bodybuilder, you know, but there's a lot of different levels to it. So I got a chance to really explore it, and, you know, to me, it's definitely like art, you know, but some of us just don't see the same way, you know?
Is there tell me about the relationships between bodybuilders. I mean, did you feel that it was a very competitive atmosphere, or was there a lot of camaraderie amongst these artists, or how did you view that?
It's very competitive, you know, especially on that level. You know, Mr. Olympia is the competition that we targeted in the film, and that competition, you know, it consists of the 20, you know, world's best bodybuilders, and it's very competitive on that level. It's competitive because obviously everybody wants to be, you know, in a top position. But also, you know, if you place in a top five, that's tremendous. You know, even to be on a stage at Olympia is already tremendous. But to place well means a lot in their careers, of course. But you know, it's also some camaraderie. You know, especially like if you go backstage at Olympia, you notice that some guys kind of like have their own little groups where they communicate more, and some guys have rivalries and they don't communicate as much. And kind of in the film, we show that as well. We show their competitive nature. It's very interesting to see that. And that was actually, I was more interested in seeing that on many levels, you know, the human aspect, because it was really dynamic, and you can really kind of see the difference between them and their characters. And it was really, I think for the viewers, it's fun to see that as well.
Is there I mean, I would imagine that people like Schwarzenegger and Ferrigno are idols to a lot of the modern competitors, but how do they see their future? Because when I think of other people that involve themselves in competitions that involve physical agility and fitness, there's kind of a limited time when they can have a career. Do they see this as a lifelong journey, or is there a time when they kind of stop participating in the activity?
Well, it's interesting, you know, unlike most sports, usually, you know, when the athlete is in his, you know, let's say late 20s, usually means that a career is already kind of ending. In bodybuilding, you know, they reach a certain peak by the age of 30, you know, and then from 30 to 40, it's really the prime time, you know, for the bodybuilder. So it's actually, you know, pretty good for them in that regard. But, you know, bodybuilding is a tough sport because it's not the highest paid sport in the world. So for you to really make it a career and for you to be, you know, dedicate your whole life to it, you really have to be in that top 10 guys in the world, you know, top 20 or whatever, and get a good sponsor and good endorsements and stuff like that. So it's very tough. So a lot of the bodybuilders in the beginning of their careers, they have to, you know, they have to have sometimes a couple of jobs to sustain that lifestyle of a bodybuilder. It gets quite expensive because you have to obviously get the food and the nutrition, go to the gym. It gets pretty overwhelming. And, you know, a lot of the guys, of course, are very business savvy. So when they kind of quit their professional careers, they go into, you know, supplements and they go into different endorsements. So, you know, they're able to, you know, build pretty successful careers. But, of course, you have, you know, guys that can do that. So it varies, you know.
I would think that all of the subjects that you approached, they were eager to tell their stories.
You know, they definitely were, but, you know, it took some time to develop a relationship because, you know, I think, like I said, since Pumping Iron, like you mentioned, there hasn't been a film that really talked about bodybuilding at all on that level. So some of them were very concerned because bodybuilders are very private characters. You know, they don't necessarily like to have cameras show up in their houses and, you know, film what they kind of do. You know, some of them are very shy and they just don't want to be exposed or they don't want to be put in a situation where, you know, it's a film that makes fun of them, you know what I mean? So, but I think after, you know, we build a relationship with them and I spent some time talking to them, they kind of saw the vision for it and they were willing to be a part of the film that really tells, a real story. And, you know, from then on, you know, they were very eager to participate.
I'm fascinated to know your distribution model because through your company, you self-distributed your film to great success, actually. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what that process was like for you. How did you go about doing that?
Well, you know, our company, we've been building it over the last, you know, 5 years. You know, a lot of the work into actual, you know, the business model was put in, like, way before we actually were able to release the film. We were kind of planning strategically on how to market and release the films. And, you know, I think in today's world, a lot of the filmmakers should start thinking, think of different business models of how to bring the film, you know, to the mass market. In our case, we knew that we had a very special film, you know, that really tackled a subject unlike any other. So we wanted to make sure that this film is going to be seen, you know. So our company was able to develop great relationships with, theatrical chains like the AMCs and the Rego and the Showcase, you know, and all the major ones and also the smaller chains as well across the whole country. So we were able to, book the film in many different theaters across the country. And after doing well the first week, we were really able to expand the following week and then, continue our expansion throughout the U.S., you know. Of course, you know, we didn't go to, you know, every single market, but we definitely hit the major ones, which was great for a film like this. Especially, you know, most people don't consider documentaries like real films that can actually bring in income, you know, but I feel like if you have the right project and you can believe in it, you definitely have to push it. And in our case, we had great support from the bodybuilding community. And eventually the people that are outside of the bodybuilding world really picked up on the film. And, you know, I was really eager to have, you know, regular people to see the film and learn something new and to see people coming to the theater and really seeing it bodybuilding for the first time was really great for me because people are really very excited about it after they saw it.
Well, and it also ensures a longer life for your film as well. I mean, because I think of the period of the, particularly the early 70s, when filmmakers used to be able to kind of travel around with their movies, so word of mouth just builds, and those movies were around forever. I mean, it wasn't limited to one weekend when a major studio opened up a film and then it's gone. So I would think that would be great for a movie like yours. And also, just like you said, hearing the audience reaction to it, I mean, kind of fostering a relationship with different audiences must be a special part of it.
Very special. And, you know, I mean, that's my mindset, you know, to be independent and to really, you know, to develop a specific strategy for a specific film. You know, it's not you know, film to me is art, you know, so you can't, like, put everything in the same category. You know, you have to build individual strategies for the release. And definitely, you know, traveling the country, you know, going to different markets, doing press in different markets, spreading the word organically, it really means a lot, you know. And, you know, I think once the people kind of pick up on it and they hear something interesting about the film or they hear something new that they haven't seen before, they will show up, you know. So we had great turnarounds in a lot of markets. And, you know, for us, it was a great release. And we're very happy about it.
So tell me, the documentary form is my favorite form of filmmaking. And it's also the most fascinating for me because documentarians, I mean, they might go in with some preconceived notions of what they'll get, but they don't really know. It's a big question mark. So the film that you end up with at the end of the journey could be completely different from what you expected at the beginning of it. So what surprised you most about what you were able to capture?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I agree with you. I mean, when it comes to documentary films, you can plan it as much as you want, and you can plan the shot list, and you can plan the, you know, schedule, but it always changes. And that's what's really exciting about it for me as well, because, you know, in Generation 9 alone, I mean, we had a lot of things that changed. You know, for instance, we were filming with a guy, you know, his name is Branch Warren from Texas. He's a bodybuilder. And we had this whole plan of going hunting with him. He goes hunting in Dallas, and it was supposed to be a big part of his story. And the day before, we were shooting the scene when he got on the horse, and he was running around his house, and suddenly the horse bucked him off. So he fell down, and he's injured his leg, literally in front of us on camera. And then the whole plan for the hunting was canceled because of that. You know what I mean? So it kind of completely changed the storyline. And he got injured right before the Olympia competition. And then, you know, it happened throughout the whole project where, you know, you kind of make certain plans, you know, and there was one guy from Europe, he came over to compete, and then he wasn't qualified for Olympia yet. And he was supposed to compete in one local competition in Tampa and then go and compete in the Olympia because he needed to qualify, you know. So he needed to place first in the Tampa competition. And then, you know, he didn't place first, so suddenly he had to go to Dallas to compete. He went to Dallas. He didn't win again. So it's like, well, what's going on here? Because he was supposed to be the favorite one to, you know, to actually do well at the Olympia, but he couldn't even qualify for it. So then he had to travel to another city to get qualified. You know, so every single thing we planned, it was somehow altered a little bit. You know, so and that to me, that's what makes it that's what really gives it the most exciting excitement. You know, and you know, in my opinion, documentary is. If they're interesting and there's a different story there, then it can definitely compete with the regular feature films. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I mean, some of the best documentaries that I've seen have been the most amazing movies in general for me. Because
yeah.
you can feel life happening like right before your eyes in a way that's just magical that you don't necessarily get from narrative films. But another part of that is, I mean, more than narrative films, I would think, you're dealing with a lot of footage in the editing room, and it has to be a challenge to kind of whittle that down and find the essence of what your movie is.
Yeah, you know, the editing process is definitely a process, you know. It's almost like you're creating a film in post-production completely, you know. When you're in the field, you worry about getting those shots, but you really spend most of the time editing the film, and you have the power and the control to really, you know, make the film and make it a different direction, take it in different directions and change it up, you know, and you have a lot more control than sometimes you would have in a feature film. But at the same time, it makes the process that more challenging because you're trying to really decide, you know, who. Let's say which character gets more time on screen, or you know what needs to be cut out. It's always a process, you know, because it's like you want to keep everything, but you just can't. And then you know you go through it till you get it right, or till you think you get it right.
Yeah, and another part of that process that I would think would be completely nerve-wracking would be to show it to the subjects in your movie because, I mean, you want it to be something that they're proud to be a part of. Was that a real nerve-wracker for you to show it to them for the first time?
Absolutely, because, you know, I've dealt with quite a few films and documentary before, and, you know, it's always, because when you see yourself on a screen, you know, it's like you imagine one thing or you kind of, you know, it's almost like you can never 100% please the subject, you know, because they see a certain image of themselves, right? They want to see themselves in a certain light, and here you are making a film that's, you know, sometimes it's very real, you know, and they don't necessarily want to see the real, real image, you know, and I totally understand. I mean, totally understand. So, you know, in this case, I'll be honest with you, I mostly got positive response from subjects, and it was a little nerve-wracking, of course, but, you know, I think they saw the bigger vision, which is, of course, that this film is the follow-up to Pumping Iron, which is monumental in itself because, like you know, we mentioned, it's been over 30 years since that movie came out, and I think they understood that in the long run, this film would be monumental for bodybuilding in general. Even though, you know, the film would talk about the good and the bad, so you kind of have to, you know, if you want to make an honest film. But I think they still understood that the fact that this movie is going to be something special for bodybuilding for years to come. And I think that's what made it easier, you know, for them to kind of accept it, you know.
Well, are you continuing? I know you have a director's cut that's going to be released in April. I believe April 4th it'll be out. So just a week or so from now. And are you continuing to play and expand in theaters at the same time?
You know, we ended our main theatrical, you know, obviously theatrical run. However, we do have a lot of special screenings. You know, we just got back from Ohio, you know, a few weeks ago, and in Ohio there was a big, it's called Arnold Classic, which is a pretty big competition. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger organizes it every year, and it's a big expo and a competition. And the film played there for a week. And then we have also a couple of screenings coming up. One in Puerto Rico in April. There's going to be, I think we're going to play a few dates in Delaware. And then the following month, we're going to be in Buffalo International Film Festival in May. And we're going to play the film there as well for a special screening as well.
Wow. So our audience can read all about that at generationironofficial.com. That's your website. Tell me about the other films that you've got cooking, because I think I read that you have a horror sci-fi movie coming up.
Yes, we finished a film called Catskill Park. It's a horror film with a sci-fi you know, twist. It's also a thriller. You know, we finally finished post-production on it, so it's going to be coming out later in the year. You know, it's a film that focuses on four friends. They go hiking up in the Catskill region in upstate New York. And then they wake up in the middle of the night and they see an anomaly in the middle of the woods. And, you know, it takes them on a journey from there. And then we also, you know, working on a couple of other documentaries and feature films as well right now. So it's a very busy year for us. And to be honest, really, it started getting really busy last year, and it's been a continuous journey from there.